Welcome to the August 10th edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, in the house, along with...
is Sidekick VR.
Sidekick VR. Man, I really wish I could have had my buddy Rusty here for this show to talk about DEF CON with me, but we're going to make whatever arrangements we can to bring him in on the next show, and he'll be able to also talk a little bit about wireless. So hopefully we can get that to happen for everyone there and spread some information about wireless.
Because wires are like chains that bind us to things.
Yeah.
You know, talk about freedom and roaming free and, you know, having liberty. Wireless is the way to go.
Definitely. All right. Well, this is going to be a very good show. Of course, we spent a lot of time talking about SCO, and we've got some good things to talk about in this section of the SCO news. And then after that, I'm going to head off into my review or looking back at DEF CON 11. So let's get right to it.
Isn't it neat how 11 is a palindrome? That's still 11 either way.
That is amazing.
I thought that was kind of nifty.
All right.
Because it's a little better than just having 1 as being a palindrome, because it's still 1.
I feel you on that.
All right. Y'all just don't feel me too much.
Okay. Basically, something I was reading up on is Microsoft now wants to take a new stance on its petition against Linux. Basically, in the past, they've called open source a cancer and an un-American. It's bankrupt. And now they're, instead of focusing on emotions, they're going to actually focus on facts, is what they say. I'm going to read something here straight from the article, some interesting takes. At a large Microsoft meeting in New Orleans a few weeks ago, Taylor and Kevin Johnson, who heads up the worldwide sales and marketing at Microsoft, told the company's sales force that Microsoft wants to have fact-based conversations, not emotional conversations about Linux and open source. Microsoft Chief Executive Officer Steve Ballmer, who 2 years ago likened to Linux as a cancer, gave a textbook example of the new fact-based tactic last week at Microsoft's annual financial analyst meeting. Using the numbers from various research companies, Ballmer said Windows costs less, runs faster, and is more secure than Linux.
And how did they figure that cost? Are those extraneous costs, time costs?
I don't think there's... No, it's a bunch of crap. Well, let me add this to it. It says, however, Microsoft Chairman and Chief Software Architect Bill Gates, in a question and answer session at the same event, seemed to swerve off the factual course as the discussion heated up a bit. He said the open source license is not open because you can't take it and everyone use it in a job creating activity. Read that one more time.
Yeah.
The open source license is not open because you can't take it and ever use it in a job creating activity.
It's a tool, so, and it produces stuff, so it's, I would say, would be a production tool. So you could do it as a job creating activity.
See, the thing is that I've noticed that Microsoft's take at open source is that it's bad for business because it's not needed. Business is not needed to help create Linux.
Yeah.
But who
cares?
There's
not an industry of creating these tools for industry to make stuff.
No, there is.
Well, that's Microsoft. Is there an industry that creates tools for, that people pay them to create tools?
Well, okay, Linux is...
And Linux, actually, people who need the tools make the tools with Linux.
Yeah, but it can be used in industry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's.
Yeah. But, I don't know. I mean, just going back here, if they're going to start putting out information that supposed facts that Windows costs less, it can't cost less. It's just, it can't.
Because it's free.
Unless somebody overcharge you, you know?
Yeah.
And then it runs faster, okay? There's been lots of debates on, or articles or reports on how well open source software is coded, saying that open source software, in one report that I read before, that open source software actually has less bugs than typical closed source software. I also have read things about how the TCP/IP stack on how Linux, processes IP is quicker than Windows. It utilizes old hardware very well, utilizes new hardware very well, and the fact that it says it's more secure than Linux, you know, if you don't plug it in, okay, but, you know, the minute you turn it on, just go to BugTrack and look up Microsoft exploits for the last, I don't know,
week?
3 weeks, let's say 3 weeks, and look up Linux for the last 3 weeks. Or look it up for the whole year, okay? And there's some bugs out there for Linux, no doubt. But it seems like everyone that comes out for Microsoft is a complete, total, totally takes out all security measures of Windows. It basically owns the box, usually every exploit that's been coming out lately. So I don't see how that's the case there.
Well, yeah, we've logically proven that Linux is better and more secure and is more usable, time and time again on the show.
It gives you, more...
Because just the sheer theoretical basis of open source, it allows for better innovation, more of it.
More options.
Yes.
Some things might, take a little bit more to learn to use, but, it's to your benefit. So I just want to bring that up just to get everyone ready for the new wave of Microsoft propaganda. And they say it's going to be fact-based, who knows?
So they're going from the emotional that it's crap to the fact base that
it's
crap.
Because of this reason, which is, if they're going to base it off these reasons right here, we know that something is, a lot of BS is coming down the line.
So it's emotion that changing the paradigm to more emotion.
Pretty much.
To disguise it as logic and reason.
Pretty much. Here's something that I found totally interesting. I couldn't believe it. Basically, there was a patent ruling against eBay, and there was a guy named Thomas Woolston who basically created the Buy It Now function. I think he had a website to where he created the Buy It Now function to where an object was priced at a certain price, and you could buy it right away. Well, he sued eBay for having the exact same thing. I don't know if he had gotten the copyright beforehand, which allowed him to say that function's mine and allowed to sue. And he had won $29.5 million. He asked for $35. He got $29.5.
Yeah, I think I could settle for that.
Yeah. And he also asked that eBay not use that feature anymore. The judge threw that out, said that, no, they can use it. Look, guy, you came up with the feature. Here's $30 million.
Yeah.
Let's call it a day, folks.
That's a good job. Go home. Retire. Have fun.
So, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, I would love to do that.
Jeez. $30 million. Okay.
So I'm just going to start creating websites that have all kinds of weird features on them and wait until other companies start using that sort of thing, and then I'll sue them.
We talked once about the people that do come up with new spamming techniques are patenting those technologies. I don't know. That's like the mafia, patenting their technologies.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Maybe I went a little too far with that, but still, I don't know. All right.
But that would be kind of nifty to do, like, a patent on a punch. Imagine that. Yeah, how much, like...
Every time Mike Tyson or someone used that punch, you would get a few bucks?
Yeah, like, well, even when in the real world, you get a couple of cents, and, you know, with all the fighting in the world, you could live pretty decently.
Yeah, it's just out of control. It's just nuts. I don't know. All right. And this is a little bit more Microsoft news. The European Union has accused Microsoft of still abusing its dominant position and says it's giving the company a final chance to defend itself. Basically, it's still talking about how Windows Media Player is now totally incorporated into Windows, and it makes it harder for rivals like Real Media, Real Networks, and Apple Time to be able to have their products on the operating system. They said either strip it off or ship it with all the other available options. And there was a few other small rants, but, you know, people are out there still making sure Microsoft's on the ball. And, you know, obviously, they didn't do anything with Internet Explorer. That just kind of phased itself out. You know, people probably got money, you know, during the antitrust case. A few things got changed around, but, you know, those tactics are still there. Problem is that they that doesn't matter what Microsoft puts on there. Operating system. So.
It's still going to be better.
All right. Well, that was the small news. Most of the stuff I picked up during these 2 weeks is, of course, the SCO news, which is flying like crazy. You've seen us talking about it many times on previous shows, and we'll probably continue to talk about it until things are solved and we're able to move on and see what the outcomes are. Well, a lot of people, I think, that follow the SCO case, I think there are a lot of people that do follow the SCO case, and they probably already know this, but if you don't know it, here you go. Basically, actually, I'm going to read it straight from here to get all the details. And this is SCO talking here. We have identified numerous files of unlicensed Unix System 5 code and Unix System 5 derivative code in the Linux 2.4 and 2.5 kernel, said Chris Sontag, a senior vice president and general manager of SCO Source, the intellectual property licensing division of SCO. We believe it is necessary for Linux customers to properly license SCO's IP if they are running Linux 2.4 kernel or later versions for commercial uses purposes. The license ensures that customers can continue their use of binary deployments of Linux without violating SCO's intellectual property rights. SCO will be offering an introductory license price. This is only the introductory. Okay. $699 for a single CPU system through October 15, 2003. The pricing for multiple CPU systems, single CPU add-ons, desktop systems, and embedded systems will be also available. Linux users who are interested in additional information on purchasing an IP license for Linux should contact their local SCO sales representative or call SCO at 1-800-726-8649 or visit their website at www.sco.com/scosource. What a crock.
Wow. Where's the line start for that one?
I mean, they haven't even proven yet that there has been any code infringed upon. How can you now put up a licensing scheme? I mean, you know this lawsuit's going to take a while possibly anyways. Who the heck, you know... That right there is trying to bully somebody to getting purchasing licenses before October. The case isn't going to be before October. It's not going to be done before then.
Yeah, they're just trying to get all the people that might, you know, that don't want to, might infringe on it. So they're just going to try to suck it up as much as they can.
You know, it's just more and more showing about how the real reasoning behind this case has nothing to do with the code. I mean... Nothing to do with it, because they're doing outlandish things that don't have a logical meaning to take those steps if you're really worried about your code being infringed upon. I mean, they can't prove it before October. It's just not going to happen in my mind. It's already August, okay? And how can they charge for something that hasn't been proven anyways? Okay, so right there's something going on there amongst all the other things we've talked about. I read two other articles. Basically, SCO wants $32 for each embedded Linux device. Okay. Even though we've talked about we've talked about the technologies that they've been talking about as being infringed upon are for multiprocessing. People that are using kernels that use features for multiprocessing, or the JFS file system.
Well, and also if it's embedded, don't you already kind of buy the licensing when you buy the product?
Well, that depends on like how the product ships. But I mean, it's Linux, so I mean, you're not paying.
Yeah, but how could you? You've already bought the thing, which has it's embedded on it. And so how can you charge a licensing fee to the user for already buying something that it just came with it?
Because they're saying SCO's code is in there.
Well, shouldn't that just be, that should just be a part of the purchase price?
Which SCO is trying to get their, they say, just money by charging $32 for it, because SCO's not getting any money out of that purchase of that embedded device. So for their code that they say is in there, they want $32.
Yeah, that shouldn't be at the end user, that should be at the manufacturer.
Yeah. So, I think
they're just trying to, like, vacuum up as much, you know, money as they can.
Well, whatever they're doing is really strange, and it's going to backfire on them, is my opinion.
No, so I think the hostility that's going to create within the user end is definitely going to hurt them in the long run.
Well, here's another thing, is that SCO has basically said government agencies must pay up to $699 for each copy of the Linux operating system that they use.
Wow.
So, you know.
It's like, well, you haven't proven that, you know, that we own that, or and you already use it, and we're going to charge you for it.
They're definitely not making any friends. You know, I don't see anybody that would be very friendly with them other than, you know, Microsoft. But, you know, it's just... Because
it's kind of like when you buy a car, and then all of a sudden, you know, let's say the Tron programmer goes, you know, gets sued, and... Well, guess what? Now you got to pay an extra $500 for a car that you already bought a while back. It just doesn't make any sense.
No, none of it makes any sense. I would suggest that nobody listen to that and just continue on. Nothing can be done legally on the behalf of them until something may be proven towards the end. And you say again, well, what if something is proven towards the end?
But then shouldn't it be all those services, you know, then those licensing fees be afterwards?
Yeah, they should be.
If
it applies.
Not reactive?
Yeah.
That's really, that's wrong.
Yeah, if it applies. They can't say, look, we're going to charge you this before there's a decision, and then if there is a decision, you know, who knows? I mean, $699, the whole operating system, you can't tell me that out of the whole, I mean, Windows doesn't even charge, Microsoft doesn't even charge that much. For Windows, and you know, for one license, we're not talking a server with 20 licenses, but they don't even charge that much, and you're telling me that you've got a few lines of your code possibly in this operating system, not even proven yet, but yet you want the cost of $700
for like 50 lines of code? That's ridiculous.
Or even 2,000 lines. I mean, there's millions of lines of code in a distribution, and it's asinine. It's just out of the ballpark. It's something, you know. They're begging for something to happen. I mean, they're doing this, I think, to get a reaction.
Yeah, I think they're being rather antagonistic about this.
But I think that people are trying to figure out what reaction they want and not give it to them, so they lose in every way possible. Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to sign on to our chat room, we can talk about different reasons why they could be being antagonistic.
Well, actually, we don't have a chat room. We have
the message board. Anyway.
Yeah, the forums.
Yeah, that way.
Well, usually, I've talked about it before, we do have the forums over at Slipnet. A lot of people get this file over at oldschoolfreak.com. I actually went through and re-encoded the MP3s to actually put the site in there, in the MP3 ID, so people know where the site is. It's www.slipnet.org, if you don't know, and you can click on forums. In each show, I post a topic for each show, which is the topic is the show, and then you can continue to have conversations within there. It's a way to communicate back to us here at In the Now, and it's a way to contribute information in the now. You're always welcome to send email at slipmode@quest.net. At least have something in the header that says In the Now, so I know not to accidentally filter it out. And, you know, contribute on the boards. There's definitely a lot of conversation to be had about SCO.
Yeah, I look forward to a lot of interesting, intelligent discussion about that.
Here's something. I've been kind of waiting to see what IBM's going to do with the SCO situation. And here it is. In a 45-page document that was filed late Wednesday, which was back early August, IBM argues that because SCO distributed a version of Linux under the Open Source General Public License, the GPL, it can't claim that Linux software is proprietary. IBM also argues that SCO software violates four IBM patents and that the company interfered with IBM's business by saying it had to terminate IBM's right to ship a Unix product, AIX. IBM is seeking unspecified monetary damages, and in a conjunction to stop SCO from shipping its software, the counterclaims came as part of Big Blue's answer to SCO's amended suit and were filed in the same federal district court in Utah. SCO has misused and is misusing its proprietary rights to Unix operating system to threaten the destruction of a competing operating system known as AIX and Linux, and to extract windfall profits and its unjust enrichment. The IBM countersuit said. In a statement, SCO reasserted its positive that Linux violates SCO's intellectual copyright laws and Unix, and called on IBM to back up its faith in Linux by providing its customers with legal protection for using the software. The continuing refusal to provide customer indemnification in IBM's truest measure of belief in its recently filed claims. Basically, it's saying that IBM really should be trying to protect its customers by telling them to not use Linux, and they continue to go forward and use Linux. Well, that's because they probably don't think they did anything wrong.
Yeah.
And if they didn't, they're willing to,
just let it go and let truth prevail.
Let truth prevail. You know, and I've read things before saying that if SCO really wanted to get things straight, they would release the code, okay, then Linux would remove the code, Linux being the general anywhere that it would be, Linux-wise, distribution, kernels, anywhere, remove the code, replace the code with something different, maybe damages would be paid, but it's turned into
a circus, really.
Circus, late night, WWF wrestling, SCO and IBM, go at it again, it's just ridiculous. Very ridiculous. And we mentioned that. We mentioned on the last show that there was a Linux user from a Linux users group that had mentioned, how could they released a version of SCO Linux. Okay? It's released under the GPL. They released the source code along with it. So that's
kind of makes it open source.
I would think so.
And so they really don't have a leg to stand on.
Yeah.
Especially if that little bit of code that Linux has that resembles SCO code is a part of that, then it should be completely
in the GPL. Here's something that goes along those lines. SCO sold a version of Linux but stopped selling it in May. Several earlier versions of SCO Linux products are still available on the company's FTP site, though. However, SCO has in fact addressed the issue in response to claims by Linux seller and former business partner SUSE by the Free Software Foundation, which wrote the GPL. On Friday, which is earlier August, SCO spokesman Blaine Stowell reiterated the company's earlier position that the GPL provisions don't apply because SCO is a Unix copyright holder and never placed the copyright code under the GPL. Distributing a product is not the same as contributing to a product, Stowell said. In other words, the mere act of distributing GPL-covered code isn't sufficient. The copyright holder also has to deliberately release the code as open source, he said. The copyright holder has to knowingly contribute to his code. Section 0 of the GPL states, this license applies to any program or other work which contains a notice placed on the copyright holder saying it may be distributed under the terms of this general public license. However, Section 6 states, each time you redistribute the program or any other work or any work base on the program, the recipient automatically receives a license from the original licensor to copy, distribute, or modify the program. Okay. I think they're twisting things here a little bit. They didn't contribute the code. Okay. Supposedly it was inserted by somebody else. We're not saying that they were a contributor to the code, but they did put SCO Linux on available, made it available. It was GPL'd, the source was there. It was not like they had the source code for the infringement source code they're talking about, and a little line above it says, this code is an open source Cisco license 5 and README folder. You know? It was there. It was there. It was GPL'd. And they didn't contribute it. Maybe they didn't knowingly contribute it.
Yeah, but it was contributed.
But it was contributed, which you could say the same argument for IBM. Like, well, maybe they didn't knowingly contribute it, or whoever contributed didn't knowingly contribute it. And, you know, then things change. But anyways, the fact is that they're not standing on firm ground.
Yeah, it's very shaky. So it'd be really neat to see how this all pans out and how that will change a lot of the license and agreements in the future.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, they're definitely going to be a lot more clear on how things are handled with the open source code. They already are very clear. I've read interviews from Linus that thinks that the system that they use now is very clear, and there's a lot of backtracking to find out if something was contributed, to find out where it came from. And it's not hard to remove it. I mean, it's not like if you remove, you know, the things that they've been talking about, that it's just not going to work, period. You know, some things might have to be rewritten, but it can be done. Okay. Well, someone else other than IBM is now stepping up to the plate. That's right. Red Hat, I'm going to read straight from the story here, so if I sound like it's a story, it's a story. Red Hat today made two significant announcements, which was August 4th, to protect Red Hat Linux customers and the Linux worldwide industry. First, Red Hat announced that it filed a formal complaint against the SCO group. The purpose of this complaint is to demonstrate that Red Hat's technologies do not infringe any intellectual property of SCO and hold SCO accountable for its unfair and deceptive actions. We filed this complaint to stop SCO from making any substantiated and untrue public statements attacking Red Hat Linux and the integrity of the open source software development process, said Mark Webink, which is general counsel at Red Hat. Red Hat is confident that it is current with future, its current and future customers will continue to realize the significant value that our Red Hat Linux platform provides without interruption. To further protect the integrity of the open source software and the open source community, Red Hat has established the Open Source Now Fund. The purpose of this fund will be to cover legal expenses associated with infringement claims brought against companies developing software under GPL license and nonprofit organizations supporting the efforts of companies developing software under the GPL license. Red Hat has pledged $1 million to be provided as funding for this initiative. For more information, please email opensourcenow@redhat.com.
Yeah, that's really cool that, you know, that there's a whole community, like grassroots, movement to help the open source community fight big business, which has a whole lot of money and a lot of capital that they can fight for a really long time. So that's a very important little thing that's starting.
Yeah, it's like the Electronic Frontier Foundation for Linux. It's basically a very good idea. It's basically saying that Linux is going to stand behind Linux, and Red Hat took the initiative to step forward and create a means for that to for it to happen, for it to take place. So that's very cool. And this.
So all of us are also going to have to stand behind them.
Yeah. Here's SCO's response. This is August 5th, which is one day afterwards. The SCO Group, Inc. today released a statement concerning the lawsuit filed against it yesterday by Red Hat, Inc. The release quotes Darryl McBride, SCO's president and CEO, as being disappointed with Red Hat CEO Matt Czolik, for not being forthcoming about Red Hat's intentions in a previous discussion. Oh, so sad.
Aww.
In the release, SCO insists that it is not trying to spread fear and uncertainty and doubt, commonly known as the industry FUD, to users. Instead, the company asserts, we have been educating end users on the risk of running the operating system that is unauthorized derivative of Unix. The company did not address the fact that it has released or refused to publicly release the information necessary for Linux developers to resolve the problems instead of attempting to collect $699 per CPU fee that have some likened to the mafia protection money.
Yeah. Because that seems a little conniving in the first place.
Yeah. According to the letter, Czolik, hopefully I'm saying something right, that was attached to the announcement. SCO will prepare our legal response as required by our complaint. McBride continued by suggesting that his company's response will likely include counterclaims for copyright infringement and conspiracy. McBride ended his letter somewhat vaguely by suggesting that Red Hat's decision to file legal action does not seem conducive to the long-term survivability of Linux. So, first of all, we're supposed to put out our protection money, and now we're supposed to roll over and shut up.
Yeah, hopefully that will never happen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, these guys are bold.
That's crazy. One big business can think that they can silence an incredible, huge community of individuals that are all working in harmony.
Yeah, and IBM's not a small company. It's a very large company, so it makes you wonder, where they come with this push, and just the boundaries that they have broken. Makes you not think of any validity. If there is code there, which I've never denied that it's not possible, doesn't mean that it can't be handled in some fashion. It doesn't take $3 million or $3 billion from IBM to pay SCO, and it doesn't take $699 per Linux user to make that correct either.
Yeah, those are exorbitant amounts of money, and for something that is very easily rectified. And that's what's screwy is stuff with closed source. Is somebody actually could be using something that's exactly the same as somebody else's closed source stuff, and they don't know it. Could have actually really been independently written in a different time and in a different place.
I think if the exact letter and character is exactly the same for a consistent amount of time, I think that could probably be a little strange. Because there's a few ways to write, more than one way to...
There's a lot of different ways to write at the same function, but at the same time, there's only a limited amount of ways to do that.
Yeah.
And so eventually once they're all copyrighted, well, guess what? They're all owned.
Kind of like the buy now option.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. This is basically SUSE is giving support to the open source initiative. There have been many substantiated and inflammatory statements made recently in an attempt, we believe, primary to slow the inevitable acceptance of Linux. Linux is a disruptive technology, troubling to many, puzzling to some, potentially freeing to all. With every disruptive technology, there will be those who will fight to maintain its status quo, fight to hold on to a losing proposition. SCO has already been halted in Germany, and we applaud Red Hat's actions to help end their activities in the U.S. and beyond. We applaud their efforts to restrict the rhetoric of the SCO group and the FUD that they are trying to instill, and we will determine quickly what action SUSE can take to support Red Hat in their efforts. We call on SCO to stop the fear, uncertainty, and doubt and join the rest of the IT community in building links into the next quantum advanced technology.
I was just thinking, is a lot of the things that SCO's been doing reek of Microsoft? Have you kind of smelled that?
A little bit.
And so we might find in the future that there is a nifty little, cartel formed between the two. And so between Microsoft and SCO, that they're going to try to muscle out the Linux.
Yeah, I think that, that kind of talk has definitely been out there. We've kind of mentioned something like that here. It's in Microsoft's best interest to not show their colors by admitting that they would be, helping this. I mean, why not? Why wouldn't they help? Obviously, they're going to help in some form.
But it would be much more effective to have SCO be their puppet.
Yeah, which is exactly, where it's at.
Because a lot of, even some of the rhetoric sounds very reminiscent of other things that Microsoft has put out in the past.
Yeah, very true. Unsubstantiated claims, saying a statement that in some strange twisted form could be true, but in reality is totally not true.
Right, and like the obscure definitions of the words and combined might actually have a touch on reality, yeah.
Yeah. Here's an off-the-topic SCO story. It's just a small thing. We talked about Sun Microsystems before. jumping on with SCO licensing. They made a deal together, and I think that Sun will now help redistribute SCO licensing, I think. Don't hold me that. But it was something like that that was happening, but I'm reading here as well that Sun Microsystems has agreed to be a reseller and support SUSE Linux. So that's, you know, they're kind of playing both sides of the story, which is, you know, they're Unix, and, you know, they've released Sun Linux and Solaris on the Intel platform. So I think they're playing out, trying to do what's going to keep them alive. But I don't have any problem with Sun because they haven't contributed to this debacle that's been happening the last few months. Openly, I guess, they haven't contributed that I know of.
Debacle.
Here is an interesting tool that's been developed. It's ready to be deployed if needed. Aduba Inc., a Sunnyvale, California company, has developed a system known as OnStage that contains a feature known as SCO Check that will conduct a complete inventory of your system, and if the SCO, meaning the SCO group, identifies some illegal code, we can do a check to find the code, identify it, and then automate the replacement of the code with Red Hat Linux or an appropriate fix.
Wow, that sounds like they'll fix everything.
Yeah.
That's a magic pill right there.
There we go. So, we're ready.
Yeah.
We're ready if it's needed to be done. All right. Well, that is the pretty much the end of all the SCO junk. Here's another article that I'm going to read that's more on the positive end that says the SCO lawsuit might actually be a good thing for Linux. SCO's challenge of IBM's use of its software is not the threat to the open source Linux operating system. In fact, SCO is a toad about to face a steamroller. Alarm bells are ringing throughout the open source software group SCO Group, which filed suit against IBM, accused of it of illegally incorporating SCO's Unix code in the Linux operating system. Some analysis are predicting an onslaught of legal attacks that will kill Linux. The alarm is overdone. While there's no relishes a prospect of going to court, this lawsuit is actually a good thing for Linux in the long run. And basically, he was talking about that if this lawsuit goes well and Linux is cleared or overcomes and still be able to grow in the manner it was before and continue to grow in whatever manner it chooses, that it will be its first big win into the corporate world. It's obviously gotten a lot of stories, you know, a lot of publicity. Obviously, people are learning now that it's a threat to someone. Someone cares about it. What does that mean to you as a consumer? Why would some big people worry about this software? Maybe it's useful to use.
Well, it's also really neat because a lot of any kind of publicity or press, you know, the more people that know about it, the better off it's going to be.
Yeah.
And also because the product is just so basically American and it's being fought against by, you know, all these corporate, you know, companies that it really kind of brings about. I like it because it's like this underdog of, you know, American Revolution-esque, where these people with ideas and dreams are fighting against the establishment to allow people freedom and liberty. It's great.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like, plus, you know, some things you've seen SCO doing, you're like, gosh, you know, would these guys just go away? You know, you almost, if you're mean, you know, I think other people would probably agree. If you really see the whole case, you're like, look, what the heck, you know? Why don't these guys named SCO that just came out of the middle of nowhere just go where they came from, you know? And when Linux has become successful, if it could become successful in the outcome of this suit, then, you know, I think that's going to be it's the stage is set for the introduction of corporate Linux.
Yeah, that should be really neat to see.
You know, honestly, I've said before, like, the popularity of Linux, it's great that people use it. I mean, in all honesty, I really don't care if it ends up in, like, lots of companies. I mean, the only thing I would benefit from is if I go to work for one of those companies, I get to use Linux or, you know, BSD or, you know, another open source operating system and have the pleasure of working with it. But, you know, it's really not about desktop dominance. You know, it's really about choice and not having your choice suppressed, and you know, allowing that choice, that model of free and open choice and trade, to continue. You know, you want to have closed source software, that's fine. You want to sell it, it's fine. If it works, well, great. You know, might even use it. But the idea of the choice being out there, which was the original purpose of its creation, that's what's enjoyable. And as long as that flourishes, I'm happy. You know, as long as that continues to...
yeah, because that's also going to ensure innovation and efficient reproduction of new tools indefinitely.
Yeah.
Because if you have closed source and everybody's closed source and there's not much communication, there's not much differentiation.
And there's definitely a lag.
Oh, yeah.
In development because, you know... I mean, why do you think... Let's just break for a moment and think... Let's just say... And, you know, it's probably done. Let's just say Intel can produce a 10 gigahertz processor right now. Let's say the automobile industry can produce a car that actually goes fast and gets you 50 miles to the gallon. Why would they release it? I mean, honestly, why would they release it? What's the next thing that they're going to try to get you to upgrade to continue their profits? Not saying that this is a bad thing. I mean, this is a good business decision. You know, some things are bad unless it pertains to the environment or something like that. You know, there's more levels of things going on there. But let's just talk about processors. Why would they give you a 10 gigahertz processor? You know, it sells for a lot. But why would they have it out? They're going to sell you the 2, the 2.2, the 2.5, the 2.7, the 3, the 3.2.
Yeah, because they're going to get more money further on down the road by doing the little steps rather than going, here's this great product.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in all honesty, I'm really not disagreeing with that model. In some instances, I think some technologies should come out, not wait. But I don't, you know, some things I don't disagree with the fact that they do that. You know, it ensures the company stays around. And, you know, what if they can't develop an 11 gigahertz processor? What happens, you know? Nobody, they don't sell anything, and all of a sudden they're gone, and you have a development team, an infrastructure in place that can create, you know, that type of device or devices, you know, that failed because, you know, it just didn't work well, that they just came out with all their goods. But with closed source, right, and you come out with like a version of Photoshop or Windows or whatever, all those updates, you know, that the developers are working on, they may have like stable updates that do, you know, interesting things. That improve the operating system, but you're not going to get them until they come out later, you know, 2 years later, a year later, whatever that is. And, you know, I guess I'm talking more about Linux here, to where, you know, if you want those updates and it's stable, you can get it right now. You can make it yourself. And yeah, so that's, you know, just another cool thing I dig about Linux. And I keep saying Linux, I want to talk about BSD as well. BSD, there's a lot of other smaller operating systems that were created out there. BOS is another one, but there's a lot of other ones out there. It's not just Linux. It's the whole open source idea, and it expands even beyond Linux and even beyond computing, the idea of open source. All right. Well, that is our... first half. The other half, we're going to go into the review of DEF CON 11.
Ooh.
So, all right. Well, basically, DEF CON 11 is a hacker conference that happened at the beginning of this month. It went all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I've been there a few times before. I've been to the whole conferences. It's really always enjoyable to go. I went with Rax, who's a part of the Phoenix Linux User... Not Phoenix Linux User Group. He's part of the Phoenix 2600 group. And I went with another friend of mine. A lot of other people from Arizona went, which is where I'm from. And we had a pretty good time. As far as speaker-wise, I'm going to go over, actually, cover it in a few different ways. I'm going to talk about some of the speakers that I really enjoyed. I wasn't able to go to all of them, of course, but I'll talk about some of the really interesting ones that I picked some stuff up on. There was a conversation with Phil Zimmerman, and he was a very interesting guy. I was only able to catch the end of that, But, you know, that was one of the benefits of going to the con, is that you get to meet people like Phil Zimmerman and many others. Kevin Mitnick was there. I even got Kevin Mitnick to sign my DEF CON badge, which was really neat. Which, actually, I have my DEF CON badge signed, and I lost it Saturday night at the Hard Rock Cafe. I was really tired. I put it down. And my friend was nice enough to give me his badge, and Kevin was nice enough to re-sign it. Let's see. What are some of the other ones I went to? Deploying DNSSEC, which is like IPSEC, but it's DNSSEC. And it's basically doing DNS queries over... they're basically digitally signed, and it basically allows for a more secure method of doing DNS queries, and you're not giving out the information to the wrong people. It also ensures the stability of your name server, talking about the validity of the data. It was very interesting. It was actually two different sections. It actually went for like 2 hours. I caught the first hour, and I wanted to move on to a few other things, but it was very interesting nonetheless. We got there Thursday night, ended up signing in, went down, got our badges, hung out a little bit. Wireless was working. There was no Ethernet internet. Everything was wireless. I didn't stay at the hotel, but I did hear that there was Ethernet internet access in the hotel rooms, which was really cool, too, that they actually have a television station devoted just to the speakers. You could actually watch all the speakers speaking in your room. And they actually had a radio station that was playing music. I think it was 93.3 was the station, FM station, playing music during the whole weekend, during the whole con. Let's see here. What else happened Friday? Oh, yeah, Mimicry. Mimicry was really cool. Mimicry was an interesting design. Basically, you would take a piece of text and you know, put it in a window and say encrypt it. And what it would do is it would encrypt the message, but the output didn't look like ciphertext. It actually looked like a conversation. The conversation, you know, actually looked pretty good as far as readability. It made sense. It was good English and grammar. Few little mistakes, but nothing really noticeable. And then what would happen is somebody could take that conversation, run it through their device, and decrypt it, and then basically get the original message. And that is very, very, very neat. So I like that. There's probably some improvements that could be done to it. On the DEF CON CD that they handed out, they actually included the source code for it, and that allowed you to play with it yourself and improve on it on your own. Of course, the war driving contest began that day, and many other contests. They have a lock picking contest. They had a few contests this year. They had quite a few contests. Wi-Fi shootout, which is really amazing contest that they did. Okay, let's see. What else? A lot of times, you know, when I go to the cons, there's a lot of good speakers. Some of them I couldn't go to because this year the fire marshal was really cracking down. A lot of people were there, and, you know, you would have a whole group of people come into a room, and it totally filled up the room, and they basically came through and made sure that you weren't standing up against any exits, weren't standing in the aisles. And after every speaker was finished, they would flush you out of the room and allow new people to come in. So there's a little bit of annoyance from that. You know, you want to keep it safe. And also on top of it, I didn't go to some speakers because the line was so long. Let's see.
Well, it kind of sounds like it needs to go to a bigger venue.
Well, they talked about that at the end of DEF CON, at the very end, at the award ceremony. They had talked about, do you want to, you know, Dark Tangent, Jeff Moss asked some questions. Do you want to stay at this hotel? People agreed that they actually wanted to stay, but they were going to figure out on dividing the ballroom in a more educated way to get more people in. And I've seen it divided in many ways because I've been there a few years. They've had way larger rooms. They didn't have the tent on the roof this year. It was actually out in the parking lot. Obviously, you couldn't park there. I mean, the tent was there, so, I mean, you could... tent had all of its area. It was a lot cooler this year. They actually had air conditioners were...
that's nice.
Far better. Well, they had air conditioners before, but these air conditioners were far more top-end, more BTUs, a lot cooler air. But back to the thing is, yeah, they do want to stay at the Alexis Park, and they do want to... figure out a better design for making room for people to, you know, be able to watch all the speakers and to, it's a growing conference though, but, I, you know, they could have done a little bit more to accommodate. Actually, VR stepped out for a moment. I want to reiterate this one to VR. I was talking about one of the speakers I went to called, his name was Mystic. They had something called Mimicry, which basically what they did was take a piece of text, like a sentence that they'd want to send to somebody, and you'd put it in a, like a box, you know, in a program, say encrypt, and when it came out, it looked like a conversation.
Well, that's neat.
So it didn't look like it was encrypted.
Oh, wow.
And then you'd take that and hit the decrypt button on the other end.
Yeah, and it'd have the key, and it would...
come back.
Oh, wow.
Very neat. And then I've got the source code. It came on, they had a disk, it was a DEF CON disk. No viruses were on it this year. And and they had the DEF CON disc, and they included lots of PowerPoint presentations, source code from the speakers, if they had programs, stuff like that. Source code was on there, so it was very neat.
Well, that's a brilliant way of encrypting that. It doesn't even look like it's encrypted, so...
Yeah, it's like, you know, send text messages to somebody, and you think you're talking to them.
Yeah.
It's encrypted.
But yet it's encrypted information. That's brilliant.
It's very neat.
That's going to... open a whole can of worms and like espionage and
yeah,
that's gonna be very interesting.
Let's see. Oh yeah, saw this on Monday. I was so impressed with this one. You're gonna love this one, VR. Okay. This one was called Government IP Tapping by Jaya Ballou. She's a woman from the Netherlands. Very smart. Okay, basically. Man, I couldn't believe the amount of information that was like disseminated in this, you know, spread out in this talk. She was talking about methods of government IP tapping. She was talking about how they got the right to be able to do it.
Yeah.
It's all in her. You know, if you want to, everyone can go to theblackhatbriefings.com, and I forget the exact links to hit, but basically you want to go to the archived videos. And search for Jaya Ballou, J-A-Y-A, just do Jaya, and you'll find her exact same presentation used here at DEF CON. And she talked about, you know, how basically the network topology of how it works. Basically, they have this box that typically, in a typical situation, would sit between the RADIUS server, which is what gives out usernames and logins. That's what you log into to get on the Internet.
Yeah.
And then in between the outbound internet traffic, so it picks up who's logging in, where they're going to, and basically that gets forwarded on. All that data does not get all the data that's logged doesn't get filtered there. It actually gets sent off to an agency, whatever the appropriate agency in the area is, and on a huge connection, and it's all filtered there. And the amazing thing, other than the amount of information that was disclosed in this presentation that you can go and pick up at theblackhatbriefings.com or blackhat.com, she also showed a video from a vendor that sells software/hardware to the feds or countries. It's called NiceTrack.
Oh, that sounds really sweet and fuzzy now, doesn't it?
And in NiceTrack, it basically showed this video of the bad guy and the good guys following him. So the bad guy, it showed, you know, these huge computers doing all this work. It showed, like, telco kind of stuff. She didn't explain any of the telco part of it, you know, phone tapping, stuff like that. Okay, the software. You're looking at, like, a GUI of phones connected, and all of a sudden, like, the bad guy picks up the phone. Oh, that phone lights up. Double click that. Oh, listening to the bad guy, you know. Take the voice, match the voice up against the bad guy's voice, make sure it's really the bad guy. You know, who's he talking to? What time does he talk to these people? Statistics on what typical times phone calls are made, where phone calls are made to. Data. pulling up information, email sent to who, what was it about, when did they send email, keywords in email, internet surfing habits.
That's all really scary stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right there, you know, and it's all available. And I was talking, we talked a little bit later, actually, and she basically said that Cisco, too, is a lot of people are coming on board to make this thing work better. Cisco, I guess, is coming on board to make their iOS, which is what runs Cisco routers and all their other equipment, to, it's an operating system, to basically work better.
For that software.
For those types of softwares.
Wow. That's...
It was amazing. I tried to get my hands on the video. I was like, you know, I'd like to have the video. You know, I can just transfer it to my laptop here. And she's like, well, I'm allowed to show up and I'm not allowed to give it out. But eventually when they put the DEF CON video archives up, you'll be able to see the video right there, right in front of your face.
Yeah.
It's it was amazing. I could not believe, you know. You know, all these things about carnivore and, you know, lantern and all these things you're thinking about, like we've talked about, you know, like I just saw the frickin' vendor video, you know, for this was just one of the companies out there providing this type of solution.
Yeah, that's it. Really, it's kind of like having LoJack on you at all times.
Yeah.
Now, when you're out on the internet, you know, the government can go, boop, you're done.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, you know, she was saying that, you know, judicially they'd have to have a warrant to be able to do this, but they're making it extremely, you know, making it a lot more easy to be able to track people, find out what they're doing, sniffing the traffic.
Well, like RIA, RIA's doing that without a warrant. They're tracking everybody and then getting a warrant.
RIAA, right?
Yeah.
Okay. For a minute, I was a RIA. Okay. Yeah. Well,
because they're having to track them. Track the people that are downloading and sharing music.
Yeah, they were given a special right to do that.
Yeah, and so they can track everybody, and then once they find that they're doing wrong, so you're essentially getting tracked, even though you might be innocent, they're treating you like you're guilty. And then once they find out that you are guilty, you know, actually really prove that you are guilty, then they're going to get a subpoena.
Yeah. Which, well, a lot of that could be a lot of scare tactics because we said once that it goes like 2,042 years to be able to prosecute all the violators.
Well, unless they all just made it all one case and did, you know, RIA against all the individuals of file sharers. They might, if they've given them this special right, they might do a special right like that as well.
The main thing that she went away with, you know, some people are like, hey, whoa, you know, they were hit by this presentation. I mean, at the end, people were just, like, raising up, clapping their hands, like, oh, my gosh, like, this was, I mean, if the con totally sucked, this would be good enough to go to the con. And she basically said, people were like, well, what can we do to protect ourselves? She basically said, encrypt every frickin' thing you do.
Wow.
I mean, everything you can do, encrypt it. She says, you know, they can capture encrypted packets, take it back and break it. They don't have problems with breaking weak encryption. But if you throw a lot of heavy encryption on it, might be some issue.
Well, like that conversation encryption thing. That would be insane encryption to try to break because of what part of the conversation is one little bit. And then, especially if they blend together, oh, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, and that thing there, I was surprised, you know, that somebody hadn't already thought of that. I thought of that a long time ago. I'm not saying, you know, I think a lot of people have probably thought about it. Like, hey, let's make something that doesn't look like encryption. You know, it was really...
Yeah, because I remember we were talking about that.
Yeah. So it was really underdeveloped, actually. I'm surprised, you know, that's really, you know, not a main thing, you know, it really been developed. But he is actually the guy that was doing it. He told everyone that it will be on SourceForge. It was not on SourceForge at the time to make it an open source software for people to develop. So I guarantee it's going to continue. I mean, why not? Such a great idea. So that was amazing.
And with a small modification to that, even, you know, making your keys even more exceptional.
Yeah. His system was pretty easy to break because it was the way to encrypt it was exact. Like, if you had, it's really easy to figure out how to undo it.
Oh, okay.
But it's not hard to implement stuff that would make it, you know, private keys, public keys, and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
To make it your own. You know.
Yeah, because you just changed the algorithm for that.
So, Another thing about Friday is if you try to get on the wireless, forget it. You're a hose. Nobody can get on. You'd get up for like 2 seconds. You would find an access point that said DEF CON. That was the access point. But the access point for DEF CON, that you'd find one with a MAC address with all zeros. You'd find one with a MAC address with all fours. At one point in time, I was talking to the wireless guy because I really wanted to get on the internet, and one of the goons there, and we found out that the access point, well, it was hidden because they didn't want anyone to, you know, get physical access to it. But the access point got really wet and juicy, and it just destroyed itself. Well, the reason it got wet is because it was behind the bar.
Oh joy!
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
You put the access point where a lot of people are drinking.
Yeah. So it was behind the bar, and it got toasted. So they put another one up. Anyways. Friday and Saturday, wireless was pretty good. Pretty good speed, actually. Of course, they always had the wall of sheep. And the wall of sheep is when people at the con, if you were on the network, found out somebody submitted a username and password. They went over to the wall of sheep guys and said, here's the username and password, and this is where they were trying to go. But the wall of sheep guys were nice because they only put up the first three letters of the password.
Oh.
And hid the rest.
That is really nice.
Another
there's some humiliation factor there. It's just good.
Oh yeah. Well, they're probably scared to death. Because there's a lot of people going into their email. SSHing. Somebody was logging in as root.
Ooh.
Yeah. Very very bad idea. There was another cool thing that happened too. It's called DriftNet, and it's when you're surfing wireless. As the images go across the air, if it's not web-enabled, this thing basically picks up that coming through the air and will process like a GIF, a JPEG, PNG, stuff like that, and will display the image on the screen. So as people are going to websites, people just kind of sat there with a projector on Sunday or Saturday night, or probably both days. They were just sitting there watching what people were surfing.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty funny stuff.
That would be a really neat little thing. It's almost like art.
Yeah.
Well, actually, all you have to do is call it a performance piece, and there you go. It's art.
Yeah. Let's see here. Just moving along. I can't talk about everything. We'd be here all day. What are some of the other ones I went to? Let's see. Saturday. I missed a lot of the morning ones on Saturday. I think it was, there's a lot of things to do there, actually. There's the whole vendors area. Lots of good junk around there. Junk, sometimes good stuff, sometimes it's junk. These are two guys I know from Arizona, actually, and they brought some chicks from Arizona, and they had a video called Hacksor, XXX. HXXXOR. And it's funny because I've seen this talked about everywhere where I know where like people that have gone to like DEF CON, they're like, who's seen the Hacksor porn video? Who's, how can I get my hands on that? And I didn't see it, but I heard it's pretty lame. It's basically these girls naked teaching you how to use like Nmap and EtherCAP and like explaining buffer overflows and...
Hey, that's how I would like to learn it.
I don't know. They weren't all that attractive. One of them was walking around the con with like a G-string and her ass was hanging out, but she was, I don't know. They were pretty young too. I mean, they're, just hitting 18 for sure. No older than 20. That's for sure. But, I don't know that. I guess it's classic. Everyone's going to remember the Hacksor porn. Maybe it'll be one of the videos that they show on the, DEF CON movie channel next year.
Well, that should be fun. The DEF CON movie channel.
Yeah, they have DEF CON movie channel.
Where it's Hacksor.
Yeah.
Born XXX every minute.
What was it? One of them was called Hack Any Website. And it says hack any website no matter what security method was used. And basically, the guy had mentioned inserting this DLL of his that you could pre-program into a Windows computer. Now, doing that, there's many means of trying to do that on your own. Once it's inserted, it basically says, like, if a certain piece of code is ran from a certain site, you can tell it to run differently. So one of his examples was he went to CNN.com. Well, and this only happens to you, whoever has this, on their machine. and it's made for Internet Explorer on Windows machines. When you go to this, like when he went to CNN.com and actually said in front page, he had like a story for like DEF CON, you know, and had a picture and all that stuff. And so you can make it do some pretty interesting things. And he's going to release that open source. I think it was on the CD as well. So that was pretty neat. They had open source kernel auditing and exploration. Basically, they had audited a few of the BSDs and talked about some of the things that they found and submitted some of these. I think they did this for OpenBSD. Found some buffer overflows and other malicious things can be maliciously done to them. And some of the things they submitted all those things over to the kernel developer or the main developer. Some of the things I guess were already fixed in the current source code, and some of the things were like, hey, cool, I'm glad you spotted that. So
yeah, and that's what's really cool is that happens with nothing else than open source.
Yeah.
And you know, like in a normal corporation, like not everybody can go through and you know find stuff that's wrong with the product and go, hey, you know, we found a way to make that better. And they're like, oh, thanks, that's great.
Yeah, and you know, another thing is that you know, it's weird because Microsoft and other you know closed source, pretty much Microsoft closed source operating system companies will say. One of the big things they said is there's no money for research and development. How do you know there's going to be anything done? Well, there's research and development done right there, and it's done by many people. It's done by the developers themselves. It's done by outside people. You know, so there.
Well,
I mean,
it's
done.
It's done even more effectively because it's done mostly by the end user.
Yeah.
Trying to make it better, usable for them. So they already have the idea of what they want as a user. And so they work at it and try to make it better for them.
Yeah, so that was definitely very interesting. There's another one, Cindy Cohn. She's from the EFF. And basically they talked about what hackers need to know about post-9/11 legal changes. And it was very interesting, a lot to learn. And it was... it's hard to explain all this here because a lot of it's discussion-based and talking about different situations and new laws that are passed. But basically, you know, just to give some attribute something to the EFF, when the Patriot Act came out, the EFF reviewed it and basically said some of these things are just insane and set a few people straight before it got passed. And actually, some of the things didn't get passed according to them. So, thank you,
yeah.
EFF. Thank them a lot because you know they're the premier defender for you know hackers, for computer crimes. It's basically they're not trying to let people do illegal things, but what they're trying to do is
they're
disseminate
all about
what's real and what's not real.
They're all about freedom-loving people.
Well, that too as well. And, you know, not sending somebody to jail for life or you know, give them the death sentence because they broke into a computer. And, you know, it's just...
charge them for treason for, you know, a file share.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to find the name of this one that I remember seeing, and I'm pretty sure I saw it on Saturday. It was basically a new protocol that would allow... And it's only used on IPv4. That would allow you to send autonomous information, anonymous information. Basically, you would be able to send information out to a source, and it would not know where it came from, and the information is encrypted.
Oh.
And the makers of it, I really want to find it here. The makers of it basically said, we know that this could be used for denial of service. Please don't use our protocol to go DOS somebody and hide where you came from. So, you know, they said it could be a bad thing, but it totally allows for anonymous using IPv4 only. They said, I asked the question, can you use this IPv6? It's only developed for 4, which is the biggest, you know, version out there for the Internet right now that's being in use, so you'll be able to use it for quite some time. I can't find it, but that's it. That's what it was. Hmm. It was very interesting.
Well, going back to our little thing on, there's actually a movement among like federal judges, to kind of do away with the maximum and minimum sentencing that Ashcroft is all about, because there's so much like maximum punishments for minimal crimes.
Yeah.
And so hopefully then, you know, Ashcroft will kind of get the idea that what's a little bit more fair anymore, and then we really don't need those maximums and minimums. That let's try to make the punishments fit the crime.
Yeah, definitely. You know, honestly, if someone's like, hey, Slip, you know, I was at DEF CON, you didn't mention this one speaker, you know, that was a really cool, you know, conversation. I might have not been to that one, and, you know, I don't have time actually to pull it. I mean, there's so many cool things that happen. I mean, it's really hard to pull it all out. Another thing that...
But you can tell us what you liked about it on our chat board.
Man, you are like, you'd be a good advertiser.
Why, thank you. So if anybody out there is, you know, owner, you know, CEO of an advertising firm, I am in the market, and you can contact me here at slipnet.org.
Yeah. Let's see. Okay, Dumpster Diving by Grifter. Everyone in the community that's been doing, you know, computer security for a long time knows about dumpster diving. It's very, very good, very refreshing.
Is that when you're a really poor hacker and you got to, like, dumpster dive for food?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, dude, you can get great stuff there.
You're supposed to be able to hack into the government and have them send free food and porn and videos to you.
Oh,
that's
right
what
on.
That's what all hackers do.
Oh, okay.
But Dumpster Dive by Grifter, it was a really... I mean, he covered it all. He covered every aspect of it. It was great. He covered it for other reasons. Computer business goes out of sale, or goes out of business.
Yeah.
Go get in their dumpsters, man. Go get some computers. You know.
Oh yeah.
He even mentioned flower shops.
Mm-hmm.
Go get some new flowers.
Yeah.
They can't keep them there forever. You know, so they do throw out some good flowers. You mentioned all sorts of stuff.
Well, yeah, you can go to, like, organic stores or co-ops and find out when they throw out all their product. It's organic stuff. It's great. Even when they can't keep it on the shelves for as long as the stuff that's been treated. And so they throw it out, and it's still good for quite some time.
If you really wanted to do something interesting, start your own garbage collection
club.
No. Well, that too is, but garbage collection and dispersal company, where you go and pick up their garbage and say you're going to disperse it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you search it, and then you disperse it.
There you go. It'd be a reconsolidation recycling or, you know, business.
It'd be the ultimate garbage pail sniffer.
Yeah.
funny thing about grifters, that during the hacker scavenger contest, they had one of the things that you had to do, other than actually get a cow's head. That was one of them.
You had to get actually a cow's head.
Somebody did that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Slaughterhouse?
I don't know.
Probably.
And one of the things you had to do was run through either Grifter or another guy's, another speaker's speaking ass naked. We had three naked guys run through Grifter's speech.
Wow.
And one of them hugged Grifter. He was pretty happy about that.
That would definitely add some humor to your speech.
another one was locking down Mac OS X. That was a really good one. He was going through talking about some of the default settings, some of the init scripts that didn't have to be ran, turning those types of things off. Pretty good all around. Let's see. Other things, social engineering fundamentals. I heard that sucked. I heard it sucked bad. I heard it was like this. So, John, I need to get some information. I'm operator number 25. Can you tell me, you know, and the other person would like read back, and it was really terrible. It was totally scripted, and you could tell that they were reading a script, and I heard it blew. I didn't go to it, but I heard it sucked. I hope Kevin Mitnick didn't go to that one and see how crappy it was. They probably read some of Kevin Mitnick's book anyways and use that. But on Sunday, that was, you know, the end of the excitement. I mean, just now we got done with the speakers, some of the speakers I want to talk about. Going back, they did have an EFF panel on Saturday night you could go to. There was Hacker Jeopardy.
Ooh.
Yeah, they got three strippers to do Hacker Jeopardy.
How's that?
Oh, they do it every year. They get some sort of attractive girl. They had three strippers this time, and it's Hacker Jeopardy. And sometimes, you know, they have the Daily Double, but some of the questions, if you got it right, you had to take a piece of clothing off.
Ooh, I can see. All right, now I understand.
Yeah. Actually, okay, Hacker Jeopardy, some people might not know. It's Jeopardy, but if you get the answer wrong, you got to drink up. Everyone's got beers.
Oh, okay.
And the strippers deliver the beer to you.
And so when you get answers right...
You don't have to drink.
But the strippers take clothes off.
If it's a question where they have to take a piece of clothing off. Not okay. Every question's like that. Otherwise, there'd be no clothing in an instantaneous amount of time. Kevin Mitnick was on the panel. Oh, yeah, let's mention that. Okay, Kevin Paulson, when he got out of jail and was the first time he had come to DEF CON, you know, since being free, he won Hacker Jeopardy, his team. Kevin Paulson. Kevin Mitnick is now free. This was his first DEF CON, and he won Hacker Jeopardy.
Right on.
Which is really neat. They had, the Urs? It was this, the group of girls that were there last year. And they were pretty perky, active.
Bubbly.
They just took off their underwear for no reason, threw it in the crowd. Hacker Jeopardy is the all-out, fanatical.
Hedonistic thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. That brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah, you could take pictures with the strippers with their tops off later. Oh, yeah, and the guys selling the Hacksaw videos were selling pictures topless with the girls for like $10.
Very cool.
It was kind of funny because one of the guys that was talking to Dark Tangent, Jeff Moss, the creator of DEF CON, and these group of guys are going to go see the Animatrix, and I was possibly going to go with them. One of the guys got a picture with one of the girls from the Hacksaw video. Jeff saw it, went over there, said, hey, you guys can't be doing that. So trying to keep, that's not bad, though. Trying to keep, he said, do it off, out of the con. Go ahead and do that.
Off-site.
So, So there's a questionnaire at the end, that Jeff Moss did, talking about, what should we do? So they're trying to give feedback. The goons were always trying to be helpful to, a lot of times Priest, which has been with DEF CON since DEF CON 4, I believe, he came out and was like, look, we know the fire marshal thing sucks, right? We got to work with it. Please do this. Let's just get it done, enjoy the con. So, doing general crowd control, trying to make sure that things were working well. Of course, there's always naked people swimming at the pool. There's three pools. I think it's three pools. And, let's see, DEF CON Forums people, they had a get-together at the hotel room. DEF CON Forums people got to meet each other. I heard there was a gay orgy, and there's pictures on DEF CON's forums of a gay orgy and one girl was in the middle of the gay orgy. It was a gay bi orgy.
Yeah, then.
All sorts of crazy.
Or she was just the token there.
Yeah. Spot the Fed contests, capture the flag, which is totally awesome. Shoot, man. They have the software. Basically, they give somebody a VMware image of, they didn't tell them what it was, but it ended up being OpenBSD. They had holes on it, and you basically had to defend it and attack others. You got points for defending. You got points for attacking. You also got points for not using a lot of bandwidth, and you would take points away if you use more bandwidth. So they have an interesting score machine. There is a encrypted key on your system, and every once in a while it uses a seed. The seed being, I think, if something was compromised on your system, if you compromised something on another system, basically that information would be encrypted, sent back to the game server. The game server, every once in a while, they're always playing all these really neat videos. I saw a Jackie Chan video. It was all Street Fighter. Jackie Chan was he was Guile, I think, actually. Every once in a while, they'd pop up the scoreboard. It was graphically, it was really, really neat. It would have, like, three dots, and the three dots were your three services you had to run. Green was if it was okay. Red is if it was being attacked, and there was a yellow. I forget what that one was for. Their scoring system
was bandwidth.
I don't know. That might be like it's not patched, maybe. Ooh. Like, not patched. Yeah, that's probably what it is. Green is probably patched. Orange is probably not patched. And red is somebody took it over.
Yeah.
Then they had two other circles on the outsides of the three. I forget what those are for. It was like dollars was the system of points was money. This group came in on Saturday, and Immunix Linux. I think they're the guys that actually makes Immunix Linux. That was their team. They were kicking total butt. And then
yeah, they made it.
Well, no, that was OpenBSD what they had. But the Immunix Linux is a like a more secured Linux operating system. But these guys came in out of nowhere. Man, I forget their name. They didn't do a lot of attacking, but they did some insane, some well-crafted defending, and used no bandwidth. So points were just
climbing. Constantly going up.
So they ended up winning. Of course, Wi-Fi was working on Saturday. I was working on Sunday. I sat down at a table filled with feds. How do I know they're feds? They were all above 40. They all owned a Dell laptop. They all had a Cisco wireless card, and they all had the same backpack. So
that actually sounds like a Mr. Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, an Agent Smith.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, some of them had the same backpacks. So they were pretty, and they always sat next to each other. And all they did was run tools all day. And they run like EtherCAP, you know, or Kismet. And they're like, "Oh, I got a password, man. You know, I just did some hacking." I was like, "No, you didn't. You just ran a program, fool, and you didn't even write it." And
you darn script kiddie.
Yeah, and one of them, you know, one guy. I don't think he was a Fed. This other guy I talked to, he actually had a 1-watt amp on his wireless to actually, increase the gain of the signal so he could pick up weaker signals. Well, this Fed came up, knew he was a Fed because he had all his toys. He pulled out a noise generator. Well, if you attach a noise generator to that antenna, it generates one noise at 1 watt around the con, which would totally knock, a lot of people, and even outside of out of the con, off the wireless because the signal would be so congested with crap. And he was all cool and happy about that. He's like, "Man, I should plug it in." I'm like, "Dude, you're lame. Don't plug it in, okay? You got it. You paid money for it. Takes 2 seconds to plug it in. You screw up a network. Hip, hip, hooray, okay? Let's just say you won and just don't do it." He pulled out his PDA, and he had this thing called Air Magnet, which is like Kismet, but it's totally, more graphically based. He's like, "Yeah, I got this. I'm pulling up the signal strength. I'm seeing what channel it's operating on. I'm seeing all the access points. I'm seeing if they got web-enabled, all their default settings and all this crap." And I was like, "Okay, I know the feds give out cool toys, but please don't take that off as you being elite."
Actually sounds like the Fed is a little bit more malicious than most others.
Oh, yeah. I'm a Fed. I can do this. It's really cool. I guess I'm going to get closer to wrapping this up. The at the end, they had the awards contest talking about who won the scavenger hunt. Yeah, somebody got a horse's head.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. And they disposed of it in a secure location because they didn't want anybody taking it after that and doing something.
Yeah, really.
Like sticking it in the con or something like that. They had the Wi-Fi shootout. That was who could make an antenna that would shoot a signal out the farthest.
Ooh.
Well, the team that won spent $99 at Home Depot. It looks like one of those air horns for the tornadoes.
Yeah.
And they just shot it out. It's made out of sprinkler pipe, like PVC pipe, piping to create the frame, and then they wrapped it in this aluminum mesh, I think. And then at the very tip of the horn, a pyramid, I guess you could say, but the base would be rectangular, not square. It was taped together. The base was this cardboard base, or the tip was cardboard. It was taped together, and then they put their device in to shoot the signal, and the antenna was the means of carrying it out and shooting it out. They got, before they got sick and tired of driving with a GPS and a signal meter, they got 32 miles.
Wow.
For $99.
That's amazing.
And they could have gotten further, but they just stopped. They're like, "All right, you won, man."
Yeah, like 32 miles. Yeah, you're far beyond anything else.
Let's see. One of the other conferences, one of the other contests, and I didn't even know about it, that they had it. One of the other contests was the DEF CON Cannonball Run.
Ooh.
A group of people started in California, I forget which city, and you had to get to DEF CON the fastest. Well, the girl in the Ducati won. But she won because she was able to surpass, because she's in the bike, but I guess at one time there was a major, major lockup on the freeway, and one person was in an SUV, and they just rode the access lane.
Oh, yeah.
All the way down. Screw this. We're taking the access lane. But the girl on the Ducati ended up winning. The other people showed about 45 minutes later. Well, the girl won. About 5 minutes later, the Yukon showed up, or the one I was talking about. And about 45 minutes later, the rest of the people showed up. So they said, you know, we don't want to endorse, you know, I think the fastest they said was like 120. They don't want to endorse, like, you know, accidents or tickets. They said, you know, no one's ever been ticketed so far. We haven't had any accidents, so it's been safe and stuff like that. The war driving contest. Well, the winners of the war driving contest did something very interesting. You're supposed to war drive for 2 days in Vegas. It says 1 day half of Vegas, the other day the other half of Vegas. But they let them war drive, and the winner happened to start war driving in L.A. Saturday.
Wow.
Well, they allowed them to do that for some reason. And then later, actually, it was revoked at the conference. They're like, yeah, these people did it. Didn't quite say in the rules correctly. 1 year, somebody actually war drive with a helicopter.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And they took that. They said you have to be on the ground. Now, next year, they're going to have to, you know, say within the state lines, even though they said 1 day was half the day was in half of Vegas, you know, the other half of Vegas. My buddy Russ told me all about it because he was actually in the contest too. I think afterwards, actually, they said that those people couldn't use those extra points that they got over in LA, and I think there's a few other discrepancies on how they weeded out like ad hoc networks and networks that just didn't quite. They weeded out some of the networks that people have gotten, so the numbers would change. And the networks that were weeded out for my buddy Rusty's crew, which is team number two, Rusty went and ran the same script to weed those things out again on his own data, and things became a little different. There's a lot of a discrepancy there. I don't know. Overall, I think they had a good time, though, and that's all that really counts. Yeah, there was that. There was, of course, the people that won the Capture the Flag, and they've got $300 leather DEF CON vests.
Ooh.
All the winners of the... This kind of made me mad. When people were coming up and giving out the awards, for each winner, they would give out a DEF CON badge. It was a different kind of DEF CON badge. It looked kind of like Matrix numbers were on the front of it, black badge. And they said it's you get in free next year, the badge.
Ooh.
$75 to get in. Okay, so they get in free next year, but when like a group of like six people or whatever in the beginning were winning, Dark Tangent would only hand out one badge for the group. I was like, all right, fine. You know, there's a lot of people who are going to hand out one badge for the group. Later on, everyone in the freaking group, like the Capture the Flag people, there was like eight people. Everyone got their own badge.
Wow.
I was like, well, that's not fair. You know?
I think that was a little bit of short-sightedness in the beginning.
Yeah. And he's like, well, we're going to have a lot of extra ones, you know, whatever. Maybe he made up for it later. Don't know.
Yeah. Maybe, they probably did.
Maybe they did. So it was very great. I mean, it's just fun to go to. You know, oh, yeah, the rules for Capture the Flag next year. It's not going to be two different days that you can do it. You do it Friday and you do it Saturday. They have hours for it. It's now going to be 36 hours straight.
Whoa.
You start, you go 36 hours, and that's it. The war driving, they're going to have better rules next year. Scavenger contests have always gone well. You can go there and not even see one speaker and have plenty of other things to do. So there's so many things. Jeff Moss, Dark Tangent, was saying that they want people to do things community-wise, be able to participate, talk to each other, do things together, and make things happen. So that's a cool thing. They have all those contests and everything there. So that's definitely another thing you can do there, all those things. Okay, well, man, great con. Next year is going to be H2K4, DEF CON 12, you know. If you have a chance, go to it. Hang out. It's cool. All right. Well, I think we're going to end on that. I could probably babble on forever about the con, but we're going to have to...
Yeah. That sounds like a great time. Fun for all.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is Slip Mode coming to you next 2 weeks. In the next 2 weeks, we'll be coming with you more SCO news. I'm really going to try to work with Rusty to get some scheduling to get him on the show. Big Arizona War Driver. Talk about a new news story that we participated in. Hopefully they don't screw it up and make it sound like evil hacksaws that will take over the world. So, all right, look forward to that. And check out slipknot.org for the forums, and I'll be signing out.
Yeah, this is VR saying later.
All right, we will see you then.